Hey everybody, quick update on this episode. It's another Convergence episode. We recorded this outside because we didn't have a hotel room that was near the convention location, which figures. And so you'll hear some noises. There's an airplane at one point. For some strange reason, we actually come out really clear in this one. And I think that has everything to do with the recorder I was using. So, woo, go recorder. Other than that, you know, anything you can do to support the show, that'd be great. But I'm just going to shut up now because I really think you should enjoy this interview with Lee Harris. So, enjoy.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hold on, give me a second. Sorry, now counting up.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
Adventures of furious, sentient, non-carbon-based life forms with Lee Harris.
I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
And
I'm Lee.
So we'll start off, everybody should know that you are the current managing editor of Angry Robot Books.
If they do, then they're incorrect. I'm the senior editor.
Senior editor. Excuse me. Got it wrong. Already off to a good start, getting things wrong. So you've been there for quite some time. So tell us a little bit about the sort of evolution of Angry Robot as you've been there.
Okay, well, I started in January 2009, some 6 months before our first books came out. And when I'd started, my publisher, Mark Gascoigne, was already in place and had been so for about 4 months at that point. And he'd acquired some titles. I came in off the street. I was very young. I was very naive. Well, I wasn't very young. I was still in my 40s. So I was certainly very naive. I had edited a short fiction magazine for quite a while, but this was my first foray into the novel territory. And so I started under Mark's mentorship and learned a huge amount from him, I have to say. Our first books came out then in July of that year, Moxieland by Lauren Bucus and Slights by Karen Warren. And I discovered that, unknown to me, this was the job that I was always supposed to be doing. I had had quite a few different types of jobs in the past. I was a professional actor. I was a theatre director for the UK's only professional genre theatre company. I was in the finals of the Cocktail Bartender of the Year Championship in 1993 in the UK. Quite a wide variety of things. But I came into editing and immediately it was obvious that I'd found my home. And over the next 5.5 years under Mark's leadership, I learned a lot, I developed quite a lot, and I couldn't be happier with what I do.
So I didn't know you edited a short fiction magazine. What was the magazine?
The magazine was called Hub.
Okay.
It started off as a physical magazine, and it lasted 2 issues as a physical magazine because it cost a huge amount of money to produce.
Yeah.
I personally lost about £10,000, so $16,000 of my own money in producing it because we paid all of our writers pro rates, including non-fiction. And it was a beautiful, full-colour glossy affair. But with a magazine like that, despite the fact that it sold quite well, you rely on advertising to go forward. And we weren't advertising salespeople. That was something we weren't able to attract. So rather than let it die, I took the somewhat foolish decision to turn it into a weekly online magazine. So every week we had a short story, a bunch of reviews, usually an interview and a feature of some sort. So there's a lot of work there. And we lasted for about 147 issues. In fact,
wow.
About 147 issues sounds a bit ridiculous. We lasted for 847 issues.
Wow. That's
wow.
That's a lot of issues. So
it was my work with Hub that brought me to Mark's attention originally, because he knew that the amount of work it takes to put something like this out week after week after week is considerable, and he wanted somebody on board with him, because it was a very small team, Electro Robot. He wanted somebody on board who wasn't afraid to roll his sleeves up and get on with a bit of hard work.
Yeah, and definitely it would demonstrate that you have a bit of dedication to go weekly. It's a lot of work. So,
how did editing a short fiction magazine prepare you for editing full-length novels? What are the differences, what are the similarities, and what did you learn from the magazine? What did you have to learn in editing novels at Angry Robot?
I think the main thing I learned from editing the magazine and going out on a weekly basis was that deadlines are important. There are quite a lot of similarities in terms of the editing style, but I think there are more differences than there are similarities with a novel. You have multiple plot lines, usually, and very often multiple POVs as well. Whereas with a short story, it's usually much more straightforward. Not all always, of course, but certainly. If you have a 10,000 word short story and a 100,000 word novel, it's not necessarily only 10 times more work to edit the novel than the short story. And there tend to be more levels of editing with a novel. So with a short story, you'll have the basic overview, the basic structural edit, and then you might go straight into a proofread or a copy edit, but it's unlikely you'll have both. With noveling, that's my new word, trademark Lee Harris, 2004.
14.
You're way off.
Oh no, I'm retroactively doing that just in case somebody falls through I'm not even going to go there. With the novel, then we'll do the structural edit, then the copy edit will follow, and then there's usually at least a couple of rounds of proofreading. It's quite a lot of reading. When you're editing a novel, you're probably going to be reading through it a minimum of 3 times.
Yeah. How much novel reading did you do when you were editing Hub and or in your own personal taste before you switched over to Angry Robot?
A lot more than I do now, simply because my work takes up so much of my reading time. Editing isn't a 9-to-5 job. In fact, most of the editing that an editor does is outside of office hours. The books that I read for leisure these days tend to be shorter. They tend to be fewer because my own reading time. I'm often reading manuscripts for work.
So no Game of Thrones.
I was thinking Way of Kings. Don't send them a copy for Christmas. I'll never read it.
So we know now that you're going to be leaving Angry Robot.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Well, or fortunately, I guess it's kind of bold.
It is both. It's very bittersweet. As I said, I've been there for 5.5 years, and this is the only time in my working history, my working life, that I'll be sorry to leave a company. I love working for Angry Robot. I think they're the single greatest independent science fiction fantasy publisher in the world. It's my baby. I've been there from the start.
You're the face of it. I mean, I've never met Mark because I've never been to UK. When I think Angry Robot, I think of you.
That's because I'm greedy and I hog the limelight.
We'll talk about your switch to Tor, but I guess the big question is, since you've been there for so many years, what would you say you were most proud of, having been a part of it since the beginning?
I think taking it from nothing, and Mark and I have done a great job, I think, in launching a number of careers. There are so many debut authors that joined us that have gone on to do bigger and better things. There are so many authors that joined us after having published only one or two novels, and there are so many authors that joined us after only having been published in the micro press. And to see some of these achieve the success that they're achieving now, it's so gratifying to think, I've had a hand in that.
You've been a real incubator of new writers and new talents.
Yeah. And I think that's actually something that independent presses can do quite well. Can find people that maybe kind of get lost in the slush, as it were, at some of the bigger houses. And then, of course, remind us that there are all these great authors that maybe the other guys didn't pick up.
Absolutely.
And then they do. And I know a number of your authors have gone into places like have done books at Tor and some of the other even larger publishers.
Yeah, Holland and HarperCollins.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, and Lauren Bucus, who had hers out through Mulholland and got like a bazillion dollar deal. So
I think it was a gazillion.
A gazillion. Okay, sorry, I got to get my numbers right. and she's been on our show a bunch of times, so she's a wonderful wonderful author. So. So now you've switched, or well, you will switch. You've got like a month left by the time we're recording this, at least. So this may be a personal question, but what made you decide to switch?
Oh, well, a couple of things. one was I mentioned earlier that my reading habits tend to go towards shorter fiction, and short fiction novellas and the novella.
Those two.
The novella length has always been my preferred reading format, and even more so once I started editing novels, because when I was reading something for pleasure, I found myself automatically gravitating towards shorter books. So I'd be at an airport bookstore or a high street bookstore, and looking for something to read. And I was ignoring all the big fat fantasies, you know, the George R. R. Martin, the Brandon Sandersons, and gravitating toward the smaller books. A lot of those tended to be the older books. So, you know, I bought of Mice and Men, I bought The Great Gatsby, partly because they were books I hadn't read. There were gaps in my education, but largely because they just looked so nice and slim. These were books that I could take on the plane, and by the time I get to the other end, I finish them. I've consumed a whole story. I've read everything the author wants me to read on this, rather than have it spread out over the course of weeks or even longer, which is sometimes the case when I have a bunch of my own very big novels to edit. Yeah. Another part of it was very, very tempting to join this imprint, because I will be starting. Well, as I mentioned with Angry Robot, I came on board a few months after at Marcad, and in the early days, all of the editorial direction was taken by Mark, because he had all of the experience, and I'm now able to take the experience that I've learned with Angry Robot and develop a new line for myself, something with my own editorial vision.
Yeah.
And another reason is it's Tor. Tor are, you know, I said earlier, you know, I'm moving from Angry Robot, who are the best independent fantasy and science fiction publisher in the world. Tor are the best of the big fives.
Yeah, you could definitely make an argument for that, yeah.
Did you get to read the Ace Doubles over in England? I don't know if they were ever published over there.
No, we didn't.
But you know what an Ace Double is.
Yeah.
So, when... For you, you may
I know
not.
What, I know what an Ace Doubles is.
Okay, just...
I've been to many bookstores.
Just for Ace Doubles were basically two novellas, two very short novels, but together in a single volume, very popular.
You the flip 60s. Them around. You,
yeah, yeah, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I like that format. I grew into science fiction reading that format. Two short, concentrated novels that you could read really quickly and often reflect and refract to each other in interesting ways. So I like novellas. I'm happy to find that you're interested in promoting novellas, because they are kind of a neither fish nor fowl between the short story and the full novel. And where do you see the advantages of the online experience in bringing novellas to public?
Well, I think novellas are ideally suited to the electronic space. We're going to be publishing in ebook format, in print-on-demand format, and in audio format. We have our own audio.
Oh, nice. Facilities. I didn't know that.
But very often, I think I'm unusual in that when I go into a store, I look for a small book. It's not uncommon to find people looking at books on a table and physically weighing them in their hands. Thinking, oh, this one, you know, this one has 320 pages more than this other, and it's the same price. This one there, therefore, must be better value. That's absolutely nonsense, of course. But when you're reading these things on your Kindle or on your iPad or on your Nook, then the difference isn't quite as obvious, and I think it's easier to judge something on the on the cover, on the blurb, on the recommendations of friends, and on the author's past history as well. So not having to judge something physically helps. And I think with audiobooks as well, a shorter length. If you're going on a journey, you can consume the whole thing on a long drive or as a long plane journey, rather than get there and have to wait another week to listen to the rest as you're driving home.
Yeah, the Way of Kings is 51 hours of audio. Mm. It just takes forever to listen to.
Yeah. It's a
full-time
job.
I'd like to have an audio that I can listen to in a long car drive, say, up to the North Shore. I appreciate that sort of length. So you're basically saying the size of it's the quality of the experience rather than the size of the experience is what you're really looking for in bringing these novellas to the home.
Well, both. Quality and, we're specifically looking for shorter than novel and longer than short story. But of course, they have to be good quality.
Yeah,
this is tall for both of them.
No, that's true. I mean, they have two short story nominations this year, and they've got nominations in, I think, every category except novel.
They don't have any.
I don't
novels.
Think they have any novels. Yeah, I mean, consistently so the last few years. What was I going to say? I was going to say something. I totally lost it. Oh no!
You can edit this.
Yeah, I can. No, I'll just leave it in there and make myself look silly. I was going to say something, but I'm sorry, Paul, save me.
You caught me off guard. Actually, I do have a completely different question. One of the challenges of an online format that, especially for ebooks, that I haven't seen quite resolved is the issue of cover art. So what are you going to do in this new imprint to try to bring cover art forward in a digital age? Because covers matter. I mean, you're in it. Whether an airport bookstore or on Amazon.com, you look at a cover and it's bad, but you make a snap judgment of a book based on that cover, good or bad. So how are you going to work that in your new imprint?
Okay, very, very simple question to answer. It's two words long. Irene Gallo.
Yep.
I met her last night. Yes, she's a wonderful person.
I'm moving from Angry Robot, which has one of the best art directors in the business, working for Tor.com, which has one of the best art directors in the business. Irene is the associate publisher at Tor.com. She will be my manager to all intents and purposes in this. And she will be responsible, certainly in the early days of the look and feel of the books that we get. It couldn't be in better hands.
That could give me real confidence. Yeah.
Yeah, she would be great. I think I was going to say, as a writer or wannabe writer, and I know there are people who listen to this who are writers. Novellas seem to be the hardest form to sell because there are almost no places that take them. I mean, I think there are maybe five pro markets that take novellas, mm-hmm. and they take almost none. They take maybe one, you know. Like,
and there are other challenges like best of the year, like Jonathan will talk about having not be able to fit novellas into his book.
Right.
So yeah, novellas are really.
I mean, it
difficult.
Has to be a super, super exceptional novella to be able to justify putting it in a a collection.
Yeah.
Because then that's like five or six short stories you couldn't put in. So I mean, it's a great thing I think for writers as well that we're getting another market, and it's going to be a market like Tor. For these longer forms that are not quite novels, but are not quite novelettes or short stories.
Yeah, we'll probably be looking at novelettes as well. We'll also be looking at serializing stories if we find the right story. Now, I don't simply want to cheat and take a book that's obviously a novel and cut it into four pieces. But serialization is something that Various folk have been experimenting with, but I think it's something that I'd like to look at very, very seriously as one of the ways for us to get more interesting stories out there.
Yeah, and serialization has its kind of its own form in a way. Because, I mean, you could just, like, chop up a thing and just kind of put it together, but that's not the same as something that is deliberately for serial form.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think is somewhat lost today, because they used to do it in the old days. They'd write, I mean, Childhood's End was basically a serial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wasn't Asimov's Foundation the first book? Was that serial?
There were sets of stories. I mean, some of those were chopped up, but others, the form of a serial is very different than just chopping up a book. I mean, you could have talked about yesterday on your panel on structure. The structure of a serial is vastly different, and it's something to be learned.
Yeah. I don't know many people who write serials.
I've read two in the last couple years.
Okay.
Sarna McGuire and Tim Pratt.
And I guess the Elizabeth Baer and doing the Shadow Unit.
Yeah, that's kind of a serial, yes. Yeah. I should count that too, so that's in three then.
So, yes, we'll see.
We'll see. How would you say your direction for the type of fiction you'll be looking for will be different between Angry Robot and Tor?
Oh, do you know, I've been giving this some thought, and again, that's another of these really, really easy questions to answer. I have no idea. I'm going to be there for another month. I'm going to be at Angry Robot for another month, rather. I'm not going to be with Tor until the middle of August. Our first books will be coming out hopefully around the end of the year, possibly the beginning of next year. It all depends on what we find. But just as it was with Angry Robot and as it is when you're starting any new imprint, you find your feet. You don't know what the shape of the thing is that you're creating until you've already started creating it. What constitutes an Angry Robot book these days is very, very different to what constituted an Angry Robot book in the early days, and I think we're going to find the same here. So there's going to be a bit of experimentation, a bit of sucking the sea, and a bit of try it and apologize later.
Are there any things that you, since you've been doing this for some time at Angry Robot, types of stories that you just are kind of tired of? Or at least things that appear in stories that you'd like to see go away?
Oh, the usual stuff. You know, no editor. I can't remember who it was. I saw online the other day, and I thought this was a good way of putting it. No editor has ever received a manuscript and read it and said, "Yay, a rape story."
Oh, yeah.
That's not to say that there isn't a place for it in the right story in the right way. It's just it's so rarely done in the right story in the right way. It's all too often there, either just for shock value or as lazy shorthand to say, this is a bad man.
Oh, okay.
This is a journey of redemption. It's don't send those.
Don't send those. Okay, you heard it from him. Don't send.
But we're dealing with a format, the novella format, that, as you said, it's not as prevalent as the short story, as the novel. So I think we will probably be a little more forgiving in the early days, and certainly until we see the quality of the stories that we're going to get through. And I fully expect the quality of the stories to be just as exceptional as the things that Tor are publishing now already.
Yeah, oh, you can expect that, I think. Yeah, you're going to see some great work. Especially because you'll get all these like popular authors who are like, finally a place I can send my novellas.
I really think we're going to get a lot of people that think, well, I've got novellas already written, I've not been able to sell them anywhere. Well, now you can.
There you go. So,
no,
you got it? It's okay, so we'll kind of wrap up because I don't want to keep you too long because you've got a life and things to do. We're going to expect you a tour in about a month, mid of August. So what are you working on at Angry Robot will be the kind of your last projects?
There are a bunch of things that I'm doing. First of all, I have to put together a large document to say, this is what I do at Angry Robot, so that when Mark replaces me, and somebody has at least some form of idea of how to fill their day. And I have probably six manuscripts left to edit, so that when I've left, we're in a good position. So Angry Robot is Mark's not going to be struggling to try to fit in all this extra editorial work on top of all the other work that he's got already. So I've got actually some of the books that I've got in at the moment. It, for an editor. it's my dream final month. I've got a Ramez Nam, I've got a Wesley Chu, I've got a Chuck Wendig, I've got the second Ishbel B book. Now that won't mean anything to you yet because the first one hasn't come out, but believe me, it's going to be wonderful. I've got the Madeline Ashby. I've got the Angry Robot's greatest hits for the next month.
Do you have any pithy, well-edited words of wisdom for your successor, or in general for anybody who's looking or curious about editing?
For my successor, I'll just say, congratulations, you've got the best job in the world. Have fun.
Excellent. Well, on that note, we'll close it out there. So, do you have a website that you'd like to direct people to, or maybe like your Twitter?
Twitter would be fine. It's at Lee A. Harris.
So Lee A. Harris.
Lee with elderly. That's L-E-I-G-H.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you, Paul, for joining me on this one.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, Lee, for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Cool. And on that note, awkward ending. And scene.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.